From WBUR Boston and NPR, I'm Sasha Pfeiffer in for Tom Ashbrook, and this is On Point. We live in a rapidly graying country. How rapidly? The number of adults over 65 is projected to almost double by the year 2050. But most U.S. cities were not designed with age in mind, and many of them present substantial challenges to older adults, from crosswalk signals that are too short for older people to get across the street, to city bus stops without enough benches for resting tired backs and feet. This hour on Point, what it will take to build age-friendly communities for an aging United States. You can join us on air or online. Are you an older adult living in the U.S.? What are the challenges you face? What are cities doing that work, and what are they doing that do not work for older people? Joining us this hour from Los Angeles, California, is Paul Irving. He's chairman of the Center for the Future of Aging at the Milken Institute. He's also a distinguished scholar in residence at the University of Southern California Davis School of Gerontology, and author of The Upside of Aging, How Long Life is Changing the World of Health, Work, Innovation, Policy, and Purpose. Paul Irving, welcome to On Point, and thanks for making time for us.
Thank you, Sasha. Pleasure to be with you.
And also with us from New York is Ruth Finkelstein. She's a professor of health policy and management at the Columbia University Aging Center, and she is former director of the Age-Friendly New York City Initiative, a very interesting initiative that we're going to be talking about. Ruth, welcome. Ruth Finkelstein, do we have you?
Yes, you do.
Oh, good.
Thank you.
I'm glad you're with us. So, Paul Irving, could you first give us a little overview of the demographic shift? We've heard a lot about aging baby boomers over the years. Are we reaching some critical point that you think really needs to grab people's attention?
Sure. Well, I think, Sasha, you alluded to it in your introduction. We have about 10,000 baby boomers in the United States turning 65 every day, but that's really just kind of a small view of the bigger challenge and the bigger opportunity, which is, by the way, not just domestic but global. We have about 900 million people in the world over 60 today. We'll have more than 2 billion, according to the WHO, by mid-century. WHO is the World Health Organization. The fastest growing cohort of people by age in the United States is older people. Just to give you a sense on the city front, about 80% of those 65 and older live in cities in the United States, and we project again those numbers are likely to increase. So what you can sense is that very much like climate change, it almost feels that it's happening slowly, that it's not easy to sense, but I suspect Ruth would agree, whose work I know so well and respect, that population aging is potentially one of the two or three most significant challenges, and I would also say opportunities facing humankind in the next century. So
Paul,
we will live in a very much older society.
And then what is your level of concern about how ready or not ready communities are for that aging population?
Well, look, I think that's the $64,000 question. To torture Robert Frost or paraphrase him, we have two roads to choose from. One is we can continue a process of sidelining older people, of not enabling and encouraging better public health prevention and wellness to try to compress the time between lifespan and health span, and in other words, the amount of time that we remain healthy. Through our lives, we can continue to embrace ageist policies and norms, or we can shift and realize that this is really a permanent state of affairs. By the way, this is very much not just about baby boomers. This is about Gen X and the millennials and the rising now Gen Z. They will live longer, and the patterns and practices and norms that we establish now, which are really things that we need to think through for the first time in the history of humankind, during virtually all of human history, lifespans were much, much shorter on average. So we really have major choices to make about how we want to live our lives and how we wanted to design environments to enable healthier, more productive, and more purposeful aging.
Ruth Finkelstein of the Columbia Aging Center, to get into specifics about what it is about our communities that aren't working that well now for older people, is the issue that our cities are mostly geared to able-bodied people, meaning sprightly and youthful, we can bound up stairs and dash across streets, and is that a very simplified way of saying what the problem is?
I think that the problem is much more profound than that. I think that the problem is that we have persuaded ourselves that older people don't have a meaningful contribution to make in society, and we therefore have structures up and down the line, everything from where groups meet to how streets are designed, to housing, how housing is designed, to the design of our parks, and we can go on and on, that are assuming that old people are just going to be sitting in their apartments somewhere. And that is a squandering of one of our growing resources. Because what's true is that this longer life expectancy, it's not just that we live longer and longer and longer being old. It's that we live longer, and the time in which we are old in the sense of needing assistance rather than being able to contribute is a smaller and smaller proportion of that. So we can change crosswalk signals all we want, but if people don't have anywhere to cross the street to go, it isn't going to make the fundamental difference that we need.
And that's a really key point that I want to get to this hour, which is we're not just talking about benches at bus stops and longer crosswalk mm-hmm. signals, but incorporating older people into society in every way, tapping their wisdom and resources for volunteer work, opening up college campuses so that they can feel meaningful and productive in the older years. All of that I want to get to. But in terms of the built environment, if we go back to the benches and the signals, give us a sense of where you think communities are limiting. What else does it do our communities make difficult for people who are aging?
Okay. So number one, the number one way that people get around is to walk. We undervalue that activity when in fact we should be valuing it more and more because it's good for us in so many different ways. It's good for us physically, obviously. I don't need to belabor that point. I think it's understood. It's good for us cognitively. We're learning more and more about that each day. It's also good for us socially. This is where you might bump into somebody that you know, or somebody that you sort of know, or somebody that you're going to get to know. So the first thing that cities need to do is take a look at their sidewalks. And one of the things that many of them will realize is that they've got whole areas that don't even have sidewalks. So job one is put in a sidewalk. Job two is to maintain that sidewalk so that you don't have to walk down it looking at your feet so that you don't fall over. And I've got to say, this is not a problem that is confined to older adults. We can all trip on a mess of a sidewalk. The sequelae may be better or worse, but sidewalks need to work. So that's number one.
To interrupt for 1 second, I want to bring in a caller who might have an interesting point here. This is Chris calling from Normal, Illinois. And Chris, your thoughts on this issue of whether our communities are built correctly, designed correctly for people who are aging.
Yes, thank you so much. It's such an important topic, and to look at this from a more sort of macro community perspective. My question is more focused on the policy, and it has to do with the Americans with Disabilities Act. So we know that aging and disability overlap a great deal. So my question would be, is it true that one of the great sort of contributions to preparing for an aging society is to build on the ADA, but also the sort of follow-up question would be, what are the limitations of the ADA with this in mind?
Thanks for that question, Chris. And Ruth, I wonder if that addresses what you're talking about. I mean, if we recognize that sidewalks are an issue, could the ADA be used just like it created handicap ramps to make sure that we have more things like sidewalks?
Obviously, there's an overlap in interests and communities between people with disabilities and aging people. There's also an area of non-overlap between the two. The ADA does not provide for sidewalks explicitly. Ironically, it provides for ramps when there are sidewalks, but it doesn't require there to be sidewalks. So those public accommodations that exist need to be accessible to people with disabilities, but it doesn't specify which public accommodations need to exist. So we're dealing just exactly as the caller said with synergistic and overlapping but not identical issues.
And Ruth, I want to come back to you and eventually and hear more of your specifics about things like sidewalks and what else we need. Mm-hmm. But Paul Irving, your thoughts, if you could summarize it, of what it takes to make a successful community for aging adults.
Sure. Let me first go comment on the caller's question. I would just say this: there's certainly overlaps between ADA and the challenges for older adults, and then we have obviously law like the Older Workers Protection Act. But I would revert to Ruth's overarching point, which is I think so important. We really need radical shifts in policy. We need innovation. We need the creation of new products and services. We need to build awareness in policy, in media, in business environments, and the like. And you know, by the way, I'm a former lawyer, so I'll take some license. Law is a wonderful tool for change, but law doesn't necessarily change attitudes. The Civil Rights Act of 1964 didn't eliminate race bias, and we still have unequal treatment of women from a compensation perspective in the workforce. So I don't think that law alone can solve our challenges with older adults. I think we really need to change hearts and minds.
That's Paul Irving. Paul, we need to take a brief break, but we will come back and continue. Paul is the chairman of the Center for the Future of Aging at the Milken Institute. We're also hearing from Ruth Finkelstein, professor of health policy and management in the Columbia Aging Center. We're talking about what cities and communities can do to be more age-friendly, considering our growing aging population. I'm Sasha Pfeiffer in for Tom Ashbrook. This is On Point. This is On Point. I'm Sasha Pfeiffer in for Tom Ashbrook. We're talking about Americans aging in cities built for young people, and we want you to join this conversation. We want to know what resources are available for you in your community if you're in your older years, what resources you wish were available, what's working and not working where you live. With us are Paul Irving, chairman of the Center for the Future of Aging at the Milken Institute, Ruth Finkelstein, a professor of health policy and management at the Columbia University Aging Center, and also joining us now from Atlanta, Georgia, is Catherine Lawler. She is director of the Aging and Health Resources Division there, and she's also director of the Area Agency on Aging. Catherine, thank you very much for being here.
Very glad to be here.
So, Catherine, could you talk to us a little about your thoughts about what communities need to have to work for aging people? What are the qualities or characteristics? And I should note that some things like public transportation and affordable housing are good things for people of all ages. Are there certain things that you think are specific to older people that more communities need to have?
I think Paul and Ruth have touched on some really important issues. And so to build on that, I would emphasize that we know that communities that are going to be successful for people of all ages and abilities are communities that have choices. They must have choices in the way that we get around, choices in the places that we live, choices and opportunities for high quality of life. When it comes to older people, making real choices available in communities can be as important as it goes all the way down to the inch. So you spoke earlier about bus shelters and sidewalks. We know that real housing choice has a lot to do with design and location, and real transportation choice has to do with flexibility, convenience, and being able to assure that people of all ages, but particularly older people, have the very details they need to make that trip or option successful for them. For example, waiting for 2 hours to be picked up isn't a real choice in a transportation system for someone who is older.
Let's also hear a little trio of sound here on a variety of things that certain communities have done to make life more rich for people who are older. Here's a senior citizen from Minnesota, and she talks about the joy she gets because she is involved in a volunteer project that helps kindergartners learn how to read.
Now the children can read those cards and tell us the sound that that letter makes, and it's been a joy now to see them even reading.
A simple thing, a volunteer thing, but it's something that helps both the kindergartners and the senior citizen, both ends of the age range. Here's another one. This is Wisconsin, a Wisconsin person that offers it. Well, Wisconsin has a program that offers a very generous perk to seniors. And this is WMTV reporting on this senior citizen attending the University of Wisconsin-Madison.
Bob is a senior guest auditor. Thanks to a law in Wisconsin, he's been taking college courses at UW for free.
Well, the great thing is I don't take tests.
Yeah, and stress-free, too.
So free classes or audited classes at local colleges, something that doesn't require an enormous amount of budget allotment, just some chairs, essentially. And here's one more. This is 72-year-old Maria Pacheco. She told PBS in 2013 why senior citizen swimming hours at pools are so important to her.
People socialize and being around people their own age, our age, I should say. You're not self-conscious of who's looking at. And here, nobody's comparing you to anyone else.
So again, just a swimming pool that has certain hours devoted to older people. They're a bit more comfortable that way. I mean, these are things that go beyond city bus benches and longer crosswalk signals. But Catherine, give us again a sense of the many things that maybe we're overlooking that could be so simple that would make communities more aging friendly.
Well, I think you've had some wonderful examples, and we know that communities across the country are finding that not only do those changes create benefits, but for example, with the swimming pool, that community facility that that local community or government has invested on in now has greater usage. So it's providing more maximum benefit in times where budgets are tight and we need to get the most out of every dollar. So it actually really goes both ways, that the older individual can have great benefit by something simple as changing the hours or making things more accommodating, but also the community sees its investments go much, much further. You know, many of these things can happen organically on their own, and people of different generations find one another, whether it's in families or in faith-based settings, and seek out how they can support one another, and one the assets of one can support the needs of the other. The issue that we have in front of us is that this change is happening at such a great scale. We need to make sure that there aren't barriers in our community for all of these great things to continue to happen and to happen for everyone. And that's really where I go back to the issue of the example of how someone could help a kindergartner with their tutoring, as long as they have a ride to get there and there's a comfortable space to be, and that program is accommodating, you know, to the hours of the day that make sense for them. Those are the things that really make all of these things possible, because we have, yes, the fastest growing older adult population, but we have to really understand that this is this population with tremendous amounts to give, assets and education skills that it would be a real loss to not be able to take advantage of.
Let's bring in two callers. One is Donald calling from Murfreesboro, Tennessee. Donald, welcome to On Point. And what are you thinking as you hear all this?
Hi, Sasha. That was really so exciting. I am 70, and last year, because of my school, MTSU, having a very large discounts, enabled me to go back and start studying for a graduate degree, master's degree. And the beautiful thing about it is I want to give back to the community. I want to share my knowledge once I get my degree with some of the younger students, maybe even at a lower grade level. And the thing that I found in some of the classes I've taken, some of the students, when we're studying history, they go, "Wow, we're reading about it in a book. You actually lived." And you realize, yes, I have something to contribute. And so that's the one thing I would say, that I think there's a great untapped national resource that would help our younger students improve their education, and I'm looking forward to being able to contribute to that.
Donald, I love that story. Thank you. And this makes me want to play a piece of sound from a senior citizen who lives in Atlanta, Georgia. Her name is Melissa Firestone, and she told the Atlanta Regional Commission, in her words, aging is an art. And she said a big part of that art is staying engaged with the community.
If you're involved, you don't have time to be old. Just keep moving. But most important, keep your brain moving. And just working with people and talking to people and seeing where there's a need. And just little things like getting curb cuts and handicap access to the park across the street.
She says, keep your brain moving. And of course, we hear that all the time about aging, whether it's crossword puzzles or Sudoku. But also, what can the community be doing to make it easier to keep your brain moving? That's a key point. Let's go to another caller who has a thought about that. This is Caitlin from Boston. Caitlin, welcome to On Point.
Hi, Sasha. I just wanted to comment about the importance of all of these age-friendly initiatives that we see popping up all over the place. I'm from the Gerontology Institute at the University of Massachusetts in Boston, and one of the things that we've noticed in our work with age-friendly communities throughout Massachusetts is the issue of social isolation, and I know that that's been talked about already today on the show, but I just wanted to talk specifically about the need to recognize social isolation and engage the people that perhaps need these opportunities the most, because I think oftentimes they're not seen and heard, and I just wanted to make that point.
Yeah, that's a key point. And Paul Irvin, I'd like you to weigh in on this, because, you know, you repeatedly make the point when you speak about this, that this will someday be us. You know, we in the United States, we sometimes don't look kindly on aging, but we are going to do it ourselves.
Yeah, it's ironic that anyone would have a negative view about aging or the process of getting old. It's frankly just a reflection of self-loathing. Aging is the one characteristic that we have in common, if we're lucky. So we'll all be there. And as I say, you know, the succeeding generations, the largest generation now in the United States is the millennials, about 83, 84 million of them. And they're very likely to live longer lives. And the patterns that were established in prior generations, when people lived much shorter lives, are very unlikely to be the patterns in the future. So, I think one of the great gifts, I'm a baby boomer, I think one of the great gifts that my generation can provide to generations to come is this kind of notion of reinventing, rethinking, reimagining what longer life should be like, and how we can continue to stay involved and contributing and intergenerationally engaged. You know, the notion of a move to a coastal community in Florida with a shuffleboard court and a rec center and a cafeteria, which was kind of a post World War II dream, is really not the aspiration or frankly in the interest of most older people today. So cities are very much a part of our future, and how we reinvent them will create patterns that may exist for generations.
And, you know, there's so many tragic stories where older people often, you know, their final days are spent quite alone and feeling very sad and depressed. And, of course, when you've lost a lot of friends or a spouse or you have health problems, that may be inevitable. But also when your community isn't really helping you find ways to get out of your house and encouraging you to do that, that's very tough as well. Let's go to Judy. This is a caller from Danvers, Massachusetts. Judy, welcome to On Point.
Hi, Sasha. I am calling about the North Shore Mall in Peabody. They open the doors up at 8 o'clock for walkers, and most of us are over the age of 70. I find all ages of physicality, from people who walk hunched over and with canes and others, like myself, who walk a little bit faster. But they do open the doors at 8 for us, and this is just for walkers. The stores actually don't open until 10. And I do want to thank them. I see these people walking, talking, smiling, waving across the hallway, and then most of them congregate in the eating area and have a cup of coffee and talk amongst themselves. And I really, really appreciate it.
Oh, that's great. And how often do you do that? How often do you walk there?
I'll be 74 next month. I've been walking there off and on, maybe about a year, uh-huh. Maybe about 2 years. Most of the time I do go out in the woods, that type of thing, over to the parks. But I love it open during the winter. I love it open when it's raining out. And it is friendly. We wave to each other as we go by, and it's a wonderful environment.
Yeah, what do you think it means for the lives of the older people who do that? What do you think they get out of it?
Oh, definitely. I feel that they get the camaraderie, and there's smiles on everybody's faces. When you walk by, no matter how slow they're going or how fast, we all smile, we all wave or give high fives. It's something to get into if you're new to it, but it doesn't take long. It takes just a couple of times to go, and we all wave at each other. And I think it starts the day off well.
Judy, thank you for that. Let's also hear from Diane. She's calling from Milwaukee, Wisconsin. Diane, welcome to On Point.
Hi, we're forgetting about all the people who have problems with their vision. I myself have problems with my vision. I'm going blind. I need someone to read my mail to me once or twice a week. Go to the bank for me.
And do you have anyone to do that for you?
Not really. My 85-year-old husband does most of it, but he's having problems lately.
And do you know whether your area has volunteer organizations where someone could do this?
I can't see to find out. You know, you can't see. You can't look up things in the phone directory if you can't find the phone directory.
You're right, of course. Absolutely, you're right. So Ruth, Paul, Catherine, what about a situation like that?
Well, I think that it raises the issue of the importance of information and communication. I don't know Diane's community specifically, but my best guess is that there's more assistance available to her than she has access to the information about. And so one of the challenges in this kind of overarching planning that we need to do, and one of the reasons that cities or counties or academic institutions, somebody, or the AAA, somebody has to take the lead in these initiatives so that they can assess what are the capacities and what are the gaps. And so a clear gap is an ability to communicate the services to Diane that she might have available to her. And those could be advertised on the radio. Those could be put on PSAs. I encourage you to reach out to your local council person or elected representative. If you're able to do that, have any contact with that. And another opportunity is to reach out to a senior center or other kind of facility just to say, give me a referral. I need this specific assistance. So I think it's important to remember that we have a continuum of functioning for people of all ages. And as we think about planning to meet the needs of people of all ages, one of the things that we have to be thinking about is communication, and we have to be thinking about it all the more smartly as we move into a digital age and where so much communication is via computer and the internet, and who's being left behind and who's being brought along in that regard.
Ruth Finkelstein, thank you for reminding us of that. And Catherine Lawler, I would like you to weigh in, because I know you've said that there, in the past, you've said there's basically a stigma around having these conversations. This is a population we tend to discount.
Yes, I'd like to address that, but very specifically to the caller's question, there is actually one number you can call from anywhere in the country, and they will connect you to the local area agency on aging, who would be able to answer her question. It's our job as area agencies on aging to answer any question an older individual or their family members would have. And I can give you that number. It's just 800-677-1116. She can call that right away and get connected locally. But
one more time, it's 800-677-1116.
Yes, perfect. It's Elder Care Locator. It's also at eldercare.gov. Okay. But to address the larger issue, I mean, I'm often asked, and I believe you may have even asked at the beginning of our hour, that, you know, what's our challenge for helping local communities get ready? Because it is something, as Paul has stated, that we're all doing. We're actually all going to be older when we get through this conversation. It's something we're actively participating, each one of us, the aging process. But I think the biggest challenge we have to getting where it's clear that we need to go is this fundamental misunderstanding of what it means to grow older. We have allowed it to be defined as an experience solely of loss and frailty and decline. And while certainly we experience tremendous change, it doesn't have to be all of those things.
That's a really good point. We have to stop thinking that old means frail and just realize that sometimes it means we need a little accommodations that we may not have needed when we were younger. Thanks for that point as well. I'm Sasha Pfeiffer in for Tom Ashbrook. This is On Point. This is On Point. I'm Sasha Pfeiffer in for Tom Ashbrook, and we're talking about the changes that U.S. cities can make and should make to help their older residents. Join this conversation. Let us know what you think it would take to make your city an ideal place to grow old. Or if you feel like you already live in a place that's ideal to grow old, let us know why. Is it more benches on sidewalks, more learning and volunteer opportunities, colleges that let you audit classes, better public transportation, volunteer opportunities? Why do you think the community you live in is a good place for older people? We're talking with Ruth Finkelstein, a professor of health policy and management at the Columbia University Aging Center, with Catherine Lawler, director of the Aging and Health Resources Division in Atlanta, and Paul Irving, chairman of the Center for the Future of Aging at the Milken Institute. And let's start off with another caller. This is Mike calling from Milford, Massachusetts. Welcome to On Point.
Hi, Sasha. Thank you for taking my call. I just wanted to comment about a program that I've heard going on at community libraries where retirees go down to the library and they basically check themselves in as being an expert in any particular field. Sometimes it's an event they lived through or possibly just something that they, part of their profession. And then the local schools will bring the children to the library and they can check out what they call a living book. So rather than go and do research from a book and learn about an event or a particular subject, they actually have the opportunity to sit with somebody who, you know, lived through those things and or had that as their profession throughout their life.
A living book. What a great term that is. What a great idea. Mike, thank you very much for that. Ruth Finkelstein, we mentioned before the break that you had helped design the Age-Friendly New York City Initiative. Mm-hmm. So give us a sense about some of the things that New York City, which you would think so expensive, older adults on a fixed income, how could New York ever be a good place for older adults to live? What has made New York, in your view, good for people who are older?
Right. First, I just want to say that initiative in Massachusetts is brilliant, and I will be copying it immediately. In New York City, affordability is a huge problem for older adults, as it is for everybody else. And the core of that is housing. But if we can set that to one side for a minute, let's talk about some major quality of life improvements that Age Friendly was able to make in partnership with city government, local businesses, local academic institutions, and the New York Academy of Medicine, who led this initiative over that time. And then we can come back to the housing piece if we have time. First of all, I want to raise the issue of the microenvironments that become increasingly important to us as we age. So, as you mentioned earlier, Sasha, our social networks may tend to shrink from various causes, and the neighborhoods that we live in become all the more important. So one of the early initiatives was to realize that people's local stores are really important to their daily lives. You go to the store much more often than you go to the doctor or you go to any service. And in an environment like New York City, where we have a culture of, I don't know why we can't brew coffee at home, but you go to the corner bodega, you buy a cup of coffee, you pick up the newspaper, then you go, you know, to the next spot and you pick up, you know, your piece of fruit for the day and so on and so on. And those interactions are either part of what's good about your day or what's bad about your day. And we identified, in concert with small businesses, the characteristics of age-friendly businesses and got businesses involved in thinking about their customers, their local neighborhood customers, and engaging policies and practices that made it possible. And these are simple, no-cost things, like having a human being answer the phone.
Oh, that's interesting. That's an interesting idea. Paul, right? would you jump in for a minute, Paul? Because at the Milken Institute, where you're chairman of the Center for the Future of Aging, you have rankings of cities that are good for helping people age successfully. And about 2 years ago, Iowa City was named the best city for successful aging. What is it about Iowa City that made it win that award?
Yeah, actually, Sasha, we divided cities into large metros and small metros. Iowa City was the number one small metro. The number one large metro was Madison, Wisconsin. Ah. Interestingly, they share some characteristics. They're both university towns. They're both towns with relatively vibrant economies and a series of initiatives involving health and transportation and housing that are relatively advanced compared to peer cities. Every city has its own characteristics, and some things are very, very hard to change. New York City, for example, where Ruth lives, has a phenomenal public transit system. That's a positive. The negative is it's quite an expensive place to live. In my city, Los Angeles, we have the very early emergence of public transit, but we still have very significant transportation problems. So even if one has a great health system, it may be hard to get to the doctor or hard to get to an educational institution. So our interest was in trying to stimulate mayors, trying to push local officials to think about the things that they could do innovatively within budget, creatively to improve lives for their older residents. And we really believe, you know.
And what are some of the things they've done that stand out to you? What are the top three, say?
Yeah, there are a range of things, and some of them involve longer term infrastructure investments, again in housing and transportation. But other things very much reflect the kinds of challenges and the kinds of opportunities that you just had on the last two calls. So the one woman, and I was so happy that Catherine had a number for her. She needs somebody to read her mail. She needs somebody to be there for her. There are communities that are creating villages, subparts, neighborhoods where people provide each other assistance and kind of with complementary skills. So she might not be able to see well, but maybe there's something else that she does that's wonderful. Maybe she's musical and can contribute something to her community. The man talked about this great program at libraries. So you see these kinds of things happening on a local level.
Let me interrupt because you mentioned the number that Catherine called out, and several emailers have emailed On Point asking us to call out that number again. So let me repeat that. This is the Elder Care Locator, also at eldercare.gov, and it's 1-800-677-1116. One more time, 800-677-1116. Catherine, did I get that right?
Perfect.
Good. And Catherine, I have a question for you, which is that we had heard Ruth mention earlier that as you get older, social networks shrink. That's why it's good to enable older people to come on college campuses, have them work with young people. But Catherine, can communities do more to help older adults date? I mean, there are dating websites for almost every demographic. Are there enough of them? Are there enough ways for older people to connect romantically with other older people if they want to?
I think most older people today would tell you that dating is not easy. So the answer to that has to be yes. There has to be more ways to connect on all kinds of levels. And you're raising the issue that nothing stops when we reach some magic age, whatever that age is. And the need to love and be loved continues to go on. And it is for so many people, no matter their age, the thing that they find life worth living, no matter how the physical parts of us change. So the idea that that would stop or not be necessary is certainly not true. And I think most older people would tell you it's not easy and it needs to be more opportunities to do that. I think this is just one of many issues that we now have because we live so much longer. We get to rethink our education. We get to rethink how long we work, where we live, but also who we're with and who we love and what all of our relationships. It is this great, great opportunity, and communities just need to make sure that we aren't putting barriers up.
When you talk with older people, Catherine, what are the main things they say that frustrate them that they feel like their communities aren't doing for them?
In our community, which is very similar to most American communities that had the bulk of their development after World War II.
This is Atlanta, Georgia.
It is Atlanta, Georgia. It is transportation. It is a grave, grave concern that when they no longer want or are able to drive, that they will lose everything that is important to them. And I always like to say in Atlanta that the transportation system isn't working very well for my 9-year-old son, and it certainly isn't working well for my 90-year-old grandmother, that there are lots of people left out when we only have one way of getting around. But in our community, when you ask folks what's the number one thing that they worry about, it's that ability to get around, because for them, getting around is about engagement.
Let's bring in a caller. This is Fred calling from Farmington Hills, Michigan. And Fred, welcome to On Point. What are you thinking as you hear all this?
Thank you. I'm listening to your program over WDET here in Detroit, and they offer a service for the blind where they will read as many as 100 different local and national newspapers and magazines each week, and they also provide readings of grocery and department store ads, senior citizen issues, hobbies, literature, etc. And this is done through volunteers that help out, and it's a very valuable thing for those that do have vision issues.
Extremely valuable. And I mean, we heard that that plea in the voice of the caller who had vision issues who called earlier. So that absolutely sounds valuable. You know, in East Hampton, Massachusetts, here in the state where On Point is based, there's an intergenerational community called Treehouse, and it pairs kids with traumatic backgrounds with foster parents, and senior citizens are part of that community. They help support the kids and their parents. Here's a piece of sound from foster parent Sandra Rubio, and she's describing the relationship that her family has with one of the older adults in the community.
She goes to our girls' schools, she picks them up, she signs them out, brings them to therapy, and then brings them back to school. I wouldn't have that anywhere else, you know, and to know that I can trust that my girls are in really good hands and someone who's really watching out for them and helping us with that day-to-day life. They come over for dinner, they help us with babysitting, they become a part of our family. You know, we adopt them in too, in a way.
So, Catherine Lawler, that's a great way to get older people involved with people much younger, sort of intergenerational interaction. What are other ways that you think we could have older people more involved with younger people?
Well, I think that we've had a number of great examples, and we have many in our community as well, that it does to the connections often are organized around education and learning opportunities. I, like Ruth, think that library example from Massachusetts was just phenomenal, where the real assets of older people come to provide very practical and real help to younger people and younger families. So there you have a great example of someone who's making every day a little bit easier for that family by managing some of the comings and goings. And I think they do tend to be around education. We have found in Atlanta that there are also great opportunities around art and arts organizations, because older people here are the lifeblood of every major art institution in the metropolitan area. With the environment as well, that there have been many opportunities for people who've maybe spent their whole career caring about and tending to our environment, using that as a way to engage younger people as the next stewards for the places that we call home.
Let's hear from another caller. This is Nicole from Nashville, Tennessee. And Nicole, welcome to On Point.
Hi, thank you. I worked for 5 years, for the last 5 years of my life, in the senior citizen arena for a company that provided all kinds of services for seniors, and realized that I had a love for that age group, which is great. I also realized the need for transportation that is so huge. And so in January of this year, I started a company here in Nashville to offer by appointment transportation services for senior citizens. And so it's been going very well so far. I've only been advertising word of mouth, but I see the extreme need, and I'm very fortunate to be able to provide this service.
So wherever a senior citizen might need to go, you could provide that transportation?
Yes.
And how much does it cost?
I'm sorry?
How much does it cost?
It's $7 for the initial, like a base rate, just to pick up, and then it's 77 cents per mile. So it depends on where the person's going about what the rate is. But I do, I contact them ahead of time to let them know exactly what to expect. You know, I let them know what my car is. And I think it's really important for seniors to be able to see the same face over and over again, and to be able to build that trust level and that relationship, because it gives them an opportunity to socialize, which is so important, because I love talking. And it's been a benefit for me as well as for them.
Nicole, that's a great idea. Thank you. That's Nicole from Nashville, Tennessee. And I want to read a comment from our website posted by Garrett Woodward. He says, I live in Asheville, North Carolina, which is one of the fastest growing places for retirees and senior citizens. And from what I've seen and come across, a big reason older folks come here is the mere fact that we don't forget about them. We include them in our community and in the conversation. For example, the University of North Carolina at Asheville has OLLI, O-L-L-I, that's the acronym, the OSHER, or possibly OSHER, I apologize to North Carolina if I'm mispronouncing that, the OSHER or OSHER Lifelong Learning Institute, which offers academic and cultural workshops, panel discussions, on-hand interactions, and more, hands-on interactions. Older folks that move here didn't move here to sit and wait around for the end of their days. They came here to add another chapter of fun, friendship, and adventure to their lives. That sounds like great wisdom to close out the show on. Catherine, one quick comment from you, if you would. It seems that you feel there's a real sense of urgency that not only do we need to do this, we are behind on making these changes.
Yes, I think this, like many issues, we needed to have started quite some time ago. The key thing that we have to consider is that we are radically reinventing all of this as we go along. And the best thing that communities can do, individuals, organizations, and agencies who are in this work or think they need to be in this work, is make sure that we're providing space for innovation. There is no one solution for everyone, and we need to make sure we've got our best thinking and ideas on the table.
That's Catherine Lawler. She's director of the Aging and Health Resources Division in Atlanta, Georgia, where she's also director of the Area Agency on Aging. Catherine, thanks. And that number she threw out earlier that I will throw out again is the Elder Care Locator, a national toll-free number where you can find services, 1-800-677-1116. Again, 800-677-1116 or eldercare.org. Also with us this hour have been Ruth Finkelstein, Professor of Health Policy and Management at the Columbia University Aging Center, and Paul Irving, Chairman of the Center for the Future of Aging at the Milken Institute. Thank you very much to all of you.
Thank you, Sasha.
And coming up tomorrow on Point, the Darien Gap. It's a lawless jungle between Colombia and Panama, and migrants from around the world risk crossing it to get into the United States. I'm Sasha Pfeiffer, in for Tom Ashbrook. This is On Point.